And it is working, although it says my bandwidth is low. So, hoping for the best. So, Aria spoke really beautifully yesterday about what metta is and how we cultivate it in this practice. And she used the word cultivation a lot, I think maybe 4 or 5 times in the course of her reflections yesterday. And I want to begin with this word because I love it. I don't know if any of you cultivate a garden, but it's a perfect metaphor for this practice. Gardens are not instant things, and they involve a lot of messiness. They involve making compost. They involve digging in the earth. They involve planting, and we plant seeds in a garden, not expecting instant results. But we just plant the seeds, and we water them, and we give them the proper conditions. And they grow slowly or quickly, depending on the plant, until we have flowers, fruit, vegetables, beauty. And so this is a perfect metaphor for what we're doing here. Metta bhavana, the cultivation of loving kindness, is a concentration practice, as I think you're already aware right now, as opposed to vipassana, which is an insight practice. The dynamics of the two are very different. And we can come to this metta practice with the intention to cultivate the concentration for the sake of jhana, or to cultivate the metta of heart and mind itself. And it's really useful to see these two aspects of the practice as ends of a continuum. It's not an either or. You don't come to the practice and just cultivate concentration or just cultivate metta. Even if we're developing concentration, the metta will arise if we're doing the practice correctly. And even if we're just cultivating metta, the concentration will arise. So they come along together. But which end of that continuum are you emphasizing? What is your intention? You know, it's really useful to know this and to know kind of where on that continuum between pure concentration and pure metta we sit in the practice. It really helps us to know, well, what's my intention here? But to understand, no matter what, even if our intention is the concentration, it's not ever one or the other, but a question of emphasis. Which are we emphasizing? What's your foreground motivation? The metta or the concentration? And personally, I have to say, the metta quality of heart and mind is so much more profound, so much more purifying, so much more powerful than simple concentration. And the end result of the practice, when we're cultivating the metta as an emphasis, is braided into the whole of, by definition, because it's a relational practice. It works through our relationships with other people explicitly and directly. So it affects the whole of our life, and it includes the whole of our life. And the concentration is, I see it as a side effect. It happens naturally. It's very pleasant. It's a skill that's good to have. But it's just concentration. You know, the metta is much, much more of interest to me. And I think to many of you as well, because look at the world we live in. It's crying out for this state of friendly, tender, engaged well-wishing. Lives cry out for a way to access that in difficult circumstances, which every single one of us is in the middle of right now, given COVID, given the state of the world, depending on where we are. So what we're sharing here is really an emphasis on the metta rather than the concentration. And I know some of you have done metta jhanas, have practiced in that way. And this is, you know, this is a beautiful, wholesome practice. But when we cultivate the metta for the sake of the metta itself, it's really quite even more important than normal to maintain a balance between the concentration and the metta so we don't lose the metta quality of heart and mind in strong states of concentration. And that's really easy to do if your concentration is strong, if you're naturally kind of a concentration walla. It's very easy to just go into a really quiet space with this practice, with the phrase. But please bring some energy into maintaining that balance so that you keep touch with the metta and the cultivation of it. So metta as a concentration practice, metta as a practice for cultivating that state of heart itself. And you've already heard a talk about metta as the basis for Vipassana meditation. I just wanted to mention that because this is another benefit of cultivating this state of heart. That's one aspect of our life as yogis that it definitely affects. And although, as Ariya said yesterday, you can't clearly separate Vipassana and metta. They come along together. They're closely associated. The benefits of metta when we have a skill in practicing it and we cultivate this state of mind, the benefits for the Vipassana practice are just wonderful because it softens everything. It brings this quality of acceptance into our practice, acceptance towards ourself, acceptance towards experience, so that we can meet each moment with this friendly attitude. So that that quality of metta that we're cultivating is really, as Ariya said, a natural quality of heart and mind that is present when obstructions are absent. And so you might ask, why do we cultivate it if it's natural? Why do we have to cultivate it if it's natural? What are we cultivating anyway? It's a good question, actually. Because if it's natural, why do we have to do anything to get there? So first, yes, it's natural. And what we're doing in this practice is to cultivate the conditions, plural, for the metta to naturally arise. And we have to do that because of samsara, because we are human beings in this samsaric realm, and there are those obstructions. So even though it's natural, the cultivation is necessary. So we create the conditions for the metta to naturally arise without, as Ariya said yesterday, without wanting an end result, but just to create those conditions and letting the metta do its own work. And the cultivation, well, what are we cultivating then? If we're not cultivating the metta quality itself, the way I see it is we're cultivating two things primarily. And you could articulate this in a number of ways, but the way I see it is we're cultivating first a habit of inclination in that direction over and over and over and over and over again. That's why we use the phrase and come back to it over and over again. And that's why we connect with what we mean when we repeat that phrase, because the connection brings this awareness, this sati, to what is the state that we are wishing for this other person. It is what brings life into the phrase. And we're cultivating a habit of inclining to that with mindfulness over and over and over again. We cultivate that connection. And the repetitive nature of the practice is what does the work of the practice. And so that repetition of the phrase, whether you can actually feel the metta or not, whether, you know, anything feels like it's happening, it's that simple repetition that's doing the work. Even if it feels like you're throwing rocks on the ground and it's totally mechanical and there's no feeling in it at all, just keep patiently repeating the phrase, connecting as best as you can. And that's what works. It's such an incredibly simple, simple practice. So we cultivate this habit of inclining to that. And then as the practice develops and as the metta picks up momentum by itself, we practice or we cultivate the skill of accessing that. It's really a skill. We learn what conditions are conducive for the metta to arise, and we incline to that over and over again, rather than creating something and throwing it out there. We're just patiently inclining in that direction. So we're cultivating this habit and we're cultivating an inclination in that direction and a skill of access to that. So in cultivating the metta habit, just as in cultivating any habit, not only is repetition important, but also consistency is important. We speak a lot about continuity. And in this context, please understand, and it's really important to understand, because if you don't understand this, you're going to be judging yourself. But please understand, it's not a continuity of having that metta feeling, but it's the continuity of inclining, of returning, of remembering, of starting again. Those various aspects of the practice when we're coming back again and again and again to this phrase. When the mind wanders off, when we remember what we're doing and we start over. When we again and again and again remember what we mean when we say this phrase. So the continuity is of the cultivation rather than of the metta itself. There can be times in the practice when the metta is continuous, and that's a gift, it's a joy. But good practice doesn't necessarily mean the metta is there all the time. Good practice is that you just keep coming back no matter what's happening. The mind can be all over the place. But if you're patient and persistent and repetitively come back when you forget, when you can come back to the phrase over and over again, that's what really, really does that work of the practice. And the more you do it, the more you can do it. It's like any other habit. Wholesome habits, unwholesome habits, they're all habits. And I wanted to say a few words about habit because it's worth respecting habit as both an ally in the case of the metta habits and as a foe in the case of unwholesome habits. Because habit is so incredibly challenging in terms of the unwholesome ones. Especially difficult habits that we have as part of our personal conditioning that come from really deep, painful karma cases. We all come to this practice with our own bundle of conditions and conditioning that happened in this life or in maybe other lives. If you hold it that way, I do. But you don't have to. I mean, just the karmic conditioning that comes from this life is plenty to work with. And we all come with that. We cannot change it. That happened. Now what? Now what is this developing a metta habit? And difficult habits that come from these places of maybe trauma or difficulty in our lives are incredibly, as I said, sticky and persistent. And when you reflect about habits in your own life and really see the strength and power of even habits that have no karmic hooks at all, it really gives you a sense of what we're up against. I've told this story many times, but I like it a lot. I was working in a place that had a clock on the wall on one side of the room, and my job was very, time was really important. So I was watching that clock often. Is working as a cook in a kitchen, and if lunch isn't out and you've got 100 yogis there, hey, trouble. So clock was important, but it was just a clock. 2 weeks after I started my job, they moved the clock to the other side of the wall. And I could not, for months, stop looking at the wrong place for the clock. I just kept, oh yeah. And it took as long as I had been watching that clock, because before I came to work at that place, I had been a yogi there for 3 months, and I'd been vegetable cutter in the kitchen. So I'd been watching that clock for 3 months as a yogi before I worked. So for at least 3 months, I was still looking at the wrong place. And that's a nothing habit. That's not trauma. It's just a clock. And that really taught me how powerful habit is. So we cultivate this habit of metta with patience and kindness because of all that conditioning, because of all that baggage we carry, and how all of these opposing states will come up. And this cultivation is what creates the purification of metta, which we'll be talking about a lot later more. So please just give yourselves a lot of space to forget, to lose yourself in your old habits. Opposing states will arise. As it says in the Dhammapada, patience is the highest renunciation. And we renounce wanting to fix or change ourselves, but simply let the metta do the work of that. That's its job, and it does it very, very well. We don't have to do it for it. We just create those conditions for this habit to strengthen and to learn how to access the metta more and more easily. It's very simple. And there's not a lot we have to do except just to do it. So I want to end with a beautiful little verse from the Dhammapada that probably many of you know, but it describes this whole practice. The Buddha said, cultivate the wholesome. Refrain from the unwholesome. And purify the mind. This is the teaching of all the Buddhas. And that's what we're doing here. So thank you for your practice and your kind attention. I want to move into more of a practice space now, leaving you with those reflections. And today, we stay with the benefactor. So I wanted, before we start to practice, to say just a few words about this category, not very much, but to remember what Ariya said yesterday. This is the one important thing I wanted to emphasize before we start to sit. When we see the goodness in another, this is the proximate cause for metta to arise. So this category is easy because these people have a goodness that is really obvious to us. And it's benefited us. So choosing your benefactor based on, you know, their goodness. And it really, you know, so many people in this world, the goodness shines out of them and it brings so much light to the world. So this creates a natural joy and the mind more naturally inclines to metta for these people. You can choose the same benefactor that you've been working with today or the last 24 hours. Really using this category to, we say in English, prime the pump. To get the engine of metta going. To create this feedback loop so that we have the momentum of the practice when we go to more difficult categories. So even if you have been already cultivating metta for a couple of weeks, and for even many of you who have come for this second retreat, you've done a lot of metta practice. But as Ariya said, we're never in the same place twice. So your relationship to this person will be different today than it was even yesterday. And the more mindfulness we bring to this connection and to the creation of this connection, the more we see the newness of that. Each moment is different. Each moment we're different. Each moment the metta is different. So see if you can bring a beginner's mind to this and just stay with this person today in the practice. So that's all I wanted to say about that. And beginning the practice now by getting comfortable. Getting very comfortable. Finding that posture that you can rest in. Finding a posture that for your body is safe. We don't want to create any harm to knees or back. When you're ready, you can close your eyes and just always at the beginning, briefly connect with yourself. Maybe at the heart center, you can put your hand there. And just feel this space as you breathe in and out. Just the general area of the chest. And feel that with tenderness. You don't have to cultivate metta for yourself, but just hold yourself kindly as you breathe and feel the heart center. And when you're ready, bringing to heart and mind this benefactor you've chosen, with either an image, a visual image, or a felt sense, if you're not such a visual person, you can imagine yourself sitting quietly next to them. And radiating loving kindness for them using this phrase that you've chosen. Connecting as best as you can with the meaning of what you are wishing for them. And again, connect with the heart. Connect with the benefactor. Repeat the phrase. Over and over again, planting seeds in your garden of metta and watering those seeds with continuity. With coming back to this repetition over and over and over again. May my benefactor be well, happy, and peaceful. May my benefactor be well, happy, peaceful, using whatever phrase works for you in your own language. And through the sit today, in the silence, simply staying with this person and with this repetition. Moment to moment, planting these seeds of kindness. So coming to a close with the formal practice, when you're ready, opening your eyes. And continuing to cultivate loving kindness as you stretch and move and adjust your posture. That repetitive inclination through the whole day is what continuity is. So your practice for the next 24 hours in the formal sitting, in the formal walking, staying with this benefactor. And as we said yesterday, in the general activities, if you find yourself called by way of interaction or somebody crosses your path or you see another being, if you're called to radiate metta to beings right around you, feel free to radiate metta for all beings. So say you go for a walk, just radiate metta for all beings that you see and encounter. And really, in the next 24 hours, noticing, this is not, you know, work on continuity, but really notice the places in your day where it's easy to have that inclination, and the places in your day where it's much harder. And paying attention in those times when you know, oh, okay, I'm going to go out and talk to these people, I'm going to lose the metta immediately. It's just, you know, probably not going to be there. But that very understanding is the basis of more mindfulness. It's like, okay, as I walk through the door, make sure I'm radiating metta when I walk into the room. And then maybe, you know, 2 seconds after you start to talk, you've forgotten it. But just having that intention as you go into the room to bring a little more energy to the remembering will play out by itself. So find those places that are difficult and those places that are easy. And really, as much as you can, polishing the continuity where it's easy and inclining to the metta with a little more energy when you know it's going to be difficult. So using this work with this very familiar benefactor to make a deeper and deeper and deeper habit in the heart of inclining in that direction with this continuity through the day. So I really wish you some beautiful metta surprises in your practice today. Interested, engaged metta practice through the day. Sitting, walking, general activities. Sitting, standing, walking, lying down, through your whole day and into your evening. Thank you for your practice, everybody. And thank you for your kind attention. So I'll turn it over now to Aria, who will do the questions and the chanting.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.